Okay, so Ben Fulford, April 28th, 2010.
Yes, this was a recent interview with Benjamin Fulford on the Jeff Rintz radio program. It was dated the 28th of April, 2010.
Okay, here we go.
I was in China, by the way, a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to a senior source directly linked to the Politburo who was at the meeting where former U.S. Treasury Secretary Paulson and Geithner were literally on their knees begging for money. On their knees.
Yeah.
And this is not something I heard on the internet. I heard from someone who was there. I was in Beijing. Okay?
They were begging.
Senior
we know
official
that.
Said he witnessed this. Okay?
All right.
But the point is that they're not getting the money. And there really is a lot of funky stuff happening behind the scenes. I wish I could talk about it more, but things are a very sensitive stage, and it's not a time to talk. But believe me, there's a lot of high-powered people worldwide working to save the American people from their criminal government. And it's just a matter of time. I'm sure of it. They're still fighting. They're still dragging. But their circle is getting smaller and smaller. They have fewer and fewer allies as time goes on. And you got to remember, the thing is that the rest of the world is doing really great these days, okay? Africa's humming. South America's humming. India, China, 12% growth. Japan, 40% growth in exports. Everywhere except the United States, Southern Europe, and Britain.
Those are the target areas. They're being taken down.
They've been in debt for the past 20 years, and now they're being told they can't borrow anymore. They have to start tightening their belt and working harder, which is a good thing in the long run. But they're kicking and fighting and doing everything they can to avoid reality, but you cannot avoid reality forever.
Yes, the first section, Geithner and Paulson, are they in China begging China for money, Ion?
They were.
Well, what years was that?
Well, that was recently.
So Benjamin Fulford, if he's referring to what you're referring to, he's accurate.
Yeah.
Were they on their knees?
You better believe. And laid out.
Laid out.
Yeah.
And this was in 2010 or 2009?
Oh, no. This would have been late. They've done it a couple of times, but late 2008.
Right, when that whole thing happened in the fall of 2008. And what did China give in?
Nope.
Have they done any more begging in the last year and a half, Geithner and Paulson?
Yep.
And no response?
And many G8 summits have been wrought regarding it.
Yeah, the Western powers discussing the fact that Geithner and Paulson, their representatives, are not getting anything. That's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Is China part of the G8 or G20 meetings? I don't remember.
Not so much.
Not so much. So the G8 meetings is an ongoing panic the last couple of years, trying to figure out a way to get China to loosen up the purse strings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how does Benjamin Fulford know this?
Well, he's been reading
Chris Story.
World Report.
Yeah, Chris Story. Yeah, I was thinking as I was listening to this, Ed, what he had said to me a while ago, that he talks with Chris Story, right? They sound similar.
And it was Leo Wanta with his stolen money from Reagan. Now he got duped over and on and on and on. The sky is blue and it's probably come crashing. It's over. See, you listen to that very long and then it comes into a place where, yes, it's down to where the humans have got to come into the place of power. They got to, or not. But if not, the bots are going to get you. So you better come on and get with it. You got it. You already have it. Non-physical's done everything that they're going to do for you. Everything. It's already done. The only thing that's glitched, the only thing holding things up is you. And as you come into your individual power, then all this stuff just becomes contrast. Well, contrast is wonderful. It's how you make a preference, to prefer. And as you prefer, it's very wonderful, delicious. Then, yes, wonderful. Congratulations. Great. No more money, no more debt, no more trouble. Well, they're already more in debt than there is money. How do you get more in debt than there is money? In tandem. Has no one had crossed their stitches and asked the question, how many dollars is a trillion dollars? $1 trillion?
Okay, so what is China doing while they do not respond to Geithner and Paulson? What is China doing with its money?
Sipping tea.
In Ion, China has loaned the United States vast sums of money. Why are they asking, why are Geithner and Paulson asking for more money?
To survive.
What about all the money they got loaned before?
Well, that went back to China.
You got to pay back.
Well, it's called a gross national product, Bob.
So everything goes to China.
It's kind of like a bad sharecropper story, where I owe my soul to the general store. Working on the haze.
Okay, so all this money, China gets all the money through Maybank, it's registered through Maybank, that's produced here, and that should be enough.
You're making a pretty broad statement there, Bob. What exactly, now you're going to start sounding like some of your conspiracy theories. Tell us exactly what you're talking about so we can be clear.
Good point. Good question. Excellent question. We'd love to go into it.
We love Ed, so let her rip.
China is getting all the money.
That doesn't have anything to do with Maybank. Come on, let's get down to some details. We want some
I didn't know you wanted to go into Maybank. Okay, I thought you were talking about...
That's what you said.
Okay, I'll get into Maybank in a second. Geithner and Paulson, they're sending all the money we make here back to China. And they're asking China to give some back.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't give any back. And China just will continue to suck out, vampirize all the money owed to them that's made here in America.
Now, wait a minute. A vampire doesn't suck out their own blood.
Right, it is there.
That's not a leeching system. That's a reparation system.
Right, so what we have here is Geithner and Paulson are not Chinese, so they're not welcome to be involved with American business, which is run by China.
Pretty much.
That's basically what you're saying. So can any of our listeners who aren't Chinese hope to be allowed in to the Chinese merry-go-round?
Well, certainly. Human creators are powerful.
I used to hear people in New York saying, man, I'm moving to China. It's the only place with jobs. Is that about it? Get yourself ready to go to China?
Who wants a worky job, Bob?
Oh, yeah, that's
everybody. Everybody that we talk to has got a worky job, and they're working themselves to death, and they're in foreclosure, and they got no money, and they can't put gas in their car, and they can't be happy, and they can't get food that has any nutrition, and anything they put in their mouth kills them and gives them cancer, and the government's running against them, and they're getting polyester ready to take over their very being. What's the point?
Right. So if we go into Maybank, you had the World Trade Center up till February 93, registering all the economic transactions around the world. Every dollar went through there.
Now, let's be specific. Those were SWIFT, ABA, wire transfers.
Right. And then it got bombed in February 93. So
they bombed it but couldn't knock it down.
Right. And so as a result of that, these transfer functions were moved to a new bank called Maybank in Kuala Lumpur. So it's been doing what the World Trade Center did up to 93. Since 93, Maybank is the chartered the accountant, the bookkeepers of every dollar that goes.
No, let's be clear. Every single EACH transfer that goes on through any credit card. Anywhere in the world goes through Maybank.
And that process was done through the World Trade Center before 93.
Well, it was limited back in those days.
Yeah.
But yes.
Okay.
You had to contact your bank, issue a wire transfer. The transfer was then, no money was real moved, but they did it with a telex. Remember the days back in a telex?
Yep.
Where they'd fax the money, and then they'd get a fax, and money would be out, and money would be in, and they'd balance it up. And work it out. And sometimes there's a little ahead, and sometimes there's a little behind. but it always worked out. It was just basically an accounting process. Well, now the way ACH transfers work, it's an electronic debit. It doesn't have anything to do with money.
Who owns the institution that does this at Main Bank?
The stockholders.
And what nationalities are the majority of them?
Not the People's Republic of China, but the people of China.
Right.
Do you get how this works, don't you? I mean, is there more that you want detail there?
How do the poor peasants on the in the wilderness of China, are they what you're referring to, Ion? That own this, that are shareholders? Obviously not. So what are the shareholders? Then you start.
What do you mean, obviously not?
Okay, forget I said that. You started off saying what we don't understand, and you didn't finish that sentence.
You think of China as the government of China,
right?
And it's not. The U.S. does not owe money to the government of China.
It owns money. It owes money to individuals.
Individual people of China.
Individual people, yeah, persons.
Well, it's broad. It's big. I mean, it's very, very large. We're not saying that. But what you're presented as China is that it's the People's Republic of China. Well, that's the government. And the government does not have all that power at all. But the people of China, however, do.
And when you say the people, are you referring to the billion or so people in China?
Yeah.
The managers of the Maybank institution there represent the people of China.
That's correct.
And the Chinese...
And that came from the beginning, before Maybank, had to do with Standard Charter.
Right, Standard Charter. You can look that up in Standard Chartered Bank. That was the bank where all of this Fort Hood-related 1933 Federal Reserve notes or bonds, that's the bank that represented the Chinese before, right, Ion? That's the way to say it? Oh, I'm not allowed to say right. Is Standard Chartered represented the people of China through most of the 20th century?
Yes. Now, there you go. Yes, no problem. Very, very good. Very good. And there's been protractions and there's been ebbs and flows, but at the end of the day, that's just the transfer of power has landed there currently. And that's no problem. It's just the way it is.
Landed where?
Maybank.
Oh, okay. So what is it about... So the average laborer in China has a sense of being part of this collective ownership.
That's correct, and they're still saving.
Why are they saving?
That's their nature. They put the equivalent of $5 a week into their collective, all of them.
Oh, it's like a tax. It's like a voluntary tax.
No, it's their participation.
It's a contribution.
It is indeed, but it has nothing to do with the government.
Right, when did that start in the 19th century? Or 2,000 years ago?
Oh, try 6,000 years ago.
So each individual family donates money to some pot?
Each individual person in each individual family.
And where does it go? Do they have a notion of which bank it goes into?
Not necessarily.
Right.
Who didn't say it went into a bank?
Okay, who do they give the money to?
Their collective.
So there's someone going around collecting.
Well, we have some thrifty people in the United States as well. And we have these large pools like the Teachers Retirement Fund and these other pension plans. And those seem to get hijacked. How come the Chinese money wasn't hijacked by the banks or those who were responsible for their money?
Okay, then that goes back to Mr. Watson at IBM when they invented the derivatives and the hedge funds.
That was
where it all got hijacked.
That was in 19.
It's like you speak about the Social Security Trust, that they have all this money held in the Social Security Trust. Good luck.
Yeah, that's in about 1954,
mm-hmm.
when a parallel worlder showed up to Mr. Watson and suggested the hedge fund idea. And he set that up so that we could have the crash of September 2008. Because they saw that would be good for us. A positive effect.
Yeah, lots of people made lots of coinage over it.
Okay. Any more questions?
Well, one more question. You said that Geithner and Paulson were on their knees and laid out. What did you mean by laid out?
On their knees with their head on the dirt, asking.
Why did they think they had to do that? Did Chinese ask them to do that, or they just figured that?
No, they were doing anything they could do, Bob. Anything in the world they could do. Because those boys over in Germany, they're not being so kind with their money due.
Yeah, you mean right today, Germany is...
Right, you better believe it.
Yeah, today it's cracking the European Union.
Well, but that's just because it was all propped up on the dollar.
Right, so the Germans are pulling out right now, today.
Well, they've done it. They've already pulled out. When they started pegging currencies against other currencies, that was always pegged on the U.S. dollar. Well, there is no more being pegged on the U.S. dollar. And when China pulled the yuan and put it into a basket of currencies and it left out the U.S. dollar, that's when you ought to tell you something. That's when people quit dealing in pesos.
Quit dealing in pesos.
Stopped dealing in pesos. Being cheekily about that they consider pesos,
yeah,
as not a valuable or stable currency.
Yeah, the dollar is right now the peso, and that's
exactly right. Well, a Canadian dollar is worth more than a U.S., so that ought to tell you something.
Yeah, so the basket, this Chinese basket of currencies, that happened earlier a few months ago, right?
No, this was like 2007.
Oh, okay. Well, they were talking about a few months ago, and is it not well known that China did this, so now they're floating as an... That was floated as an idea about 4 months ago.
Oh, no, it was instigated sometime. 4 months ago is when they stopped taking dollars for oil, engaging OPEC against dollars. So now they can trade oil in whatever's currency they want to trade in. Because the deal was, from Nixon, was that it had to be, you own the oil well, and we'll own the oil well, and you own the shaft. And so as long as it's coming and what comes out of there, we'll pay you. As long as it's in U.S. dollars, we'll pay you whatever you want.
Okay, so the Geithner and Paulson went over, tried a couple times. They've long given up. Paulson's not, he's down in the Caribbean. He's not doing this anymore, bowing before China. Correct?
That's right. Of course, Bob, but, you know, if you... Okay.
Is anybody representing America and begging to China right now?
They ain't listening. They're not getting an audience anymore.
Right, so that was expressed by Obama nodding, bowing to the Chinese
mm-hmm.
leader the other couple weeks ago.
Which they don't do. U.S. presidents don't bow.
Right, and that was an attempt to get more money?
An attempt to keep them from collecting what they already owe.
All right.
But let me go back, if I can, Ben, please.
Mm-hmm.
Toyota.
Yes.
It looks to me, my sense of it is, that this is another designed attack on a very powerful and profitable corporation by the enemies of success, unless it's their own success. It looks to me like Toyota has been singled out. That's the way it looks over here.
Yeah, but they've only been singled out in the United States. The Japanese government hasn't found any problem with their safety. The Chinese government hasn't.
That's funny. I hadn't heard that. Yeah.
If you look at the details, they say, okay, the new cars, they stop at within 13 feet instead of 12 and a half feet. So let's find them for that, you know.
Got it. Stuff like that.
And I do believe, I mean, my sources here tell me also, they were ordered to put a microchip in their cars that allowed police to override the vehicle. And I believe that's true of American cars, too. And they've been messing with those chips deliberately to try to sabotage that company's reputation in the United States. This is what I'm hearing. Remember, I used to cover the auto industry for Forbes and stuff. So it's not a just a case of a company that used to have a really high quality suddenly going downhill. It's just a case of the Americans being angry at the Japanese because the Japanese have stopped buying U.S. government bonds because they don't want to finance the giant military machine that's impoverished them over the past 30 years. And I have direct sources, okay, in the Japanese military police security establishment who tell me very clearly that they will no longer assassinate Japanese politicians or journalists or, you know, government officials on behalf of the Americans.
Anything interesting in that statement about Toyota being targeted in the United States but not in other countries?
Well, the only reason it is because of Government Motors.
Yeah, so Government Motors went after Toyota. You agree with Fulford there?
They had to.
They had to. So they did.
The government owns it, and they're too big to fail.
The government owns what?
General Motors.
Oh, yeah, no, I know it's Government Motors, right, but they went after Toyota.
Because they were the competition. Who's going to buy an Impala Chevrolet when you could pay less money for a Camry and it actually have better gas mileage, be more comfortable, have all the bells and whistles, have all the goo stuff on it, and go 700,000 miles, or the Chevrolet, if you get 100,000 miles out of it, it's a miracle.
So you don't have, do you have anything more to say about the Toyota situation that Fulford?
No, it's not about the bonds. The Japanese aren't buying U.S. bonds.
He said that.
Yeah, he said that they were being punished because Japan ceased buying U.S. bonds. Well, Japan's never been a big buyer of U.S. bonds. Where Japan got their money was because the nasty Americanos bought their Sony Bravia XBR2s and their every other piece of technology that came supposedly from the U.S. but couldn't afford to be made there, so they sent it back to Japan for them to produce it, and they shipped it back to here, the technology that came from them, that came from us, that got to them to get to us, so we could give lay down money checks to them for their products here. But the yen is not a very stable thing because it's all balanced on. When the U.S. people stop buying the Japanese's things, Japan's done. And you can look at the yen and the difference thereof between the U.S. dollar and the yen. And when it gets too far of a great difference, you can watch for some calamity because it's on its way. Every single time, without fail or exception, you got the yen carry trades, where if you just show up, they'd give you a couple of billion yen to do things to make the economy go, because their inflation has gotten such an outrageous extreme to where a nice dinner costs you 60,000 yen. Well, that's pretty crazy.
Hmm. Any questions, Ed?
And Fulford said that there's a microchip in the Toyota that allows the police to override it. So was this what was used to create these brake failures?
Well, but the only problem is that they don't have the technology. They have the chip, but they don't have the technology to activate it, to use it.
Okay. And so why were these Toyota cars failing in their you know, to stop?
Well, there's only been about 100 documented realities of that. Out of how many million Toyotas?
It's been exaggerated.
No, you think?
Like, it was it filled in after the swine flu failed. swine flu panic.
Oh, no, the pig flu. It flew.
Yeah, what's happening with the swine flu panic? Are they still doing that?
They're trying to revamp it. They've got a new one up in New York State they're trying to practice on to see how it takes.
What's that?
Well, it's just a new form of pigs flying.
Okay. All right, so we'll
got to do something to get rid of all this extra vaccine that they've made.
Yes. Okay. Goldman Sachs, this part.
Well, the other big sign of change, of course, is that they've finally gone after that most sacred of sacred cows, Goldman Sachs. Now, I'm still not completely sure they're really going after them. I worry that they might be doing what they say in Japan is having the lizard shake off its tail. In other words, they have a civil lawsuit instead of a criminal lawsuit.
Right.
And they throw one or two young traders to the wolves and hope they can then get away, you know. And if that happens, then it'll obviously just be a cover-up. But I'm suspecting that once they open this can of worms, there will be no shutting it, and they won't be able to do that. It's things that they're just... The more people find out about how much they've been robbed and conned by Wall Street, the more repercussions are going to be. Because they were doing fraud, pure and simple. There's no other word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, finally, the chickens are coming home to roost. They thought, you know, they got away with it for so long. I guess they got arrogant. They thought they could get away with it forever. And they thought they could do one of their managed economic crises in the United States and set up a fascist world government, but no, it's just not working. That's my take on things.
What do you think of Fulford's assessment of the fate of Goldman Sachs, Ion?
Well, it's why Ed has chicken troubles.
You want to follow that up?
I'm home to roost, Ed.
So... I mean, is Paulson, when he's begging China for money, he wants money for the Goldman Sachs circuits?
No. They're trying to get the Federal Reserve balanced before it just goes belly up. You've already got governors leaving their post, and it's a pretty sweet deal, and you wouldn't want to leave it.
You have governors leaving their posts, and how's that connected to Goldman Sachs?
Nothing. Goldman Sachs doesn't mean anything about anything. The Federal Reserve crumbling is what it's about.
Right. So you're talking about governors of the Federal Reserve leaving the membership.
Yeah, they're just quitting. Sorry. It's sort of like your Mr. Greenspan, the delicious mind of reason that even straightened out Paul Volcker's little conundrums. And he graduated one day, retired on a Sunday, and didn't even get a gold watch, and was going to retire. He's pretty aged, but pretty sharp at his ciphering ability and capacity. He retired one Sunday afternoon, and the next morning, Monday morning, he went to work to run the European Union.
Is he still doing that?
He is indeed.
Okay, so Goldman Sachs is a subset of the collapse of the Federal Reserve, and the Tea Party meme is coming in the fall, and they're going to take advantage of that. Its weakness. They're going to take advantage of its weakness and start a new banking organization.
Well, no, they're just going to get rid of everything that stops this crazy spiral of spending your way, eating your way out of debt.
So Goldman Sachs is gone?
Oh, certainly.
Okay. So what did it mean over the past year that they made a lot of money after the crash, and now they had to go and be interrogated in front of the Senate, but did they make any money? What was the perception? Had they not crashed yet?
Yeah, that's all after. That's all after.
After stuff. It's like who's
well,
looking for someone to blame?
Well, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you place the blame, remember?
Right, so Goldman Sachs, they put out the information that Goldman Sachs over the past year was making a lot of money when everybody else was going down, and they set that up so they could nail Goldman Sachs for someone to blame.
Well, and the same thing, Citigroup and Citibank was toast, and now all of a sudden they're turning big profits. If you're printing the money and processing it as you go, it's not too hard to come make your books balance.
All right. So Citibank, or what'd you say, Citigroup or Citibank?
They're all hooked up. Yeah.
So they're doing okay, but they're being set up for a fall?
Well, they've already crumbled. See, all these super banks aren't working. There's nothing. They can't receive. They've gotten to the place now, if you have a vast sum of money, there's not a bank you can go deposit it in other than maybe three.
Mm.
They can't receive the deposit. They're already upside down. Banks see deposits as liabilities. Now, you, the consumer, you see it as an asset. But for the banker man, it's a liability because he's on the hook for you for that amount of money.
Okay, so Citigroup is temporarily being propped up with nothing so that they can be further blamed? Is that what your point is?
No, they're the golden arches that people are driving by getting their fast food from. That's all.
And why are they able to provide that?
Because they borrowed it. And I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
And I thought you meant Citigroup bought it, or borrowed it?
Right.
Yeah. Who'd they borrow it from?
Anybody standing, and a lot of it from themselves.
Okay. So they're a zombie bank.
Oh, law, yeah.
Okay. We'll continue with Blank Fiend of Goldman Sachs.
Mr. Blankfein said that he felt that there was absolutely no moral obligation on the part of Goldman to be honest with its clients.
Well, that's what happens if you have a conflict of interest, which is what they do. In other words, when they got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, they allowed them to once again trade both their money, other people's money, and their own money at the same time. And, of course, they make sure they profit and the other people don't. That's why they separated commercial banking from investment banking in the first place. So when you have a system where you're just tempted...
You want to stop? You want to comment on him?
Well, yes, but you don't have to be very articulate to calculate that. If you're buying wrenches for a dollar... and you're selling wrenches for a quarter, the only way you could make that kind of a system work is to get a whole lot of trucks on the road.
And
they're buying and selling from themselves. So the longs and the shorts, because it all comes through their order process, then it's a simple chip body function to know when a big order's going in that everything's going to go long and you should buy short and vice versa. So you could place your order and place enough shorts to cover it. It really wouldn't make any difference if you were pitching or catching. Mm. You're going to hit the number either way. And
is that what Fulford was saying? You're
what he's trying to say.
I see.
When he talked about a conflict of interest.
Yes. And so he's saying that separation solved it. No, it didn't. All that happened is the investment bank borrows from the commercial bank to cover their shorts and run their margins. So the separation is by making a phone call rather than writing it out of your own account. No difference.
Okay, we'll carry on.
And this whole thing started with Clinton and Greenspan. And again, I don't believe this is an accident. I don't believe this was a cause of, you know, just speculative excess and regulatory mistakes. I still think it was deliberate, planned economic sabotage against the United States of America. They knew exactly what they were doing, and it was a long-term plan. And it was aimed at creating a fascist, that is to say, corporate-controlled,
right,
non-democratic world
mm-hmm.
government.
Correct. Agreed.
They allowed you to have 100 times leverage. Then they pumped up the real estate market. They made hundreds and hundreds of times profits.
They
did all the profits in the Cayman Islands.
Yep.
And then they crashed the market. They were going to buy the whole U.S. up and pennies to the dollar like they've been doing since time immemorial, except that they were stopped this time. And they were stopped because they were using mostly Asian and some Middle Eastern money to do this. And the Asians and the Middle Eastern said, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to finance you crazy people. And this is the thing that people still in the rich countries in the U.S. and Europe fail to understand about this crisis. It's not a global financial crisis. It's a rich country crisis. And it's happened because the rest of the world has stopped subsidizing you. That's all it really boils down to. In other words, the Greek crisis is partly because the Chinese and the Japanese and stuff aren't putting money into your military machine. And so suddenly, you have a much smaller pie, and then you start fighting over it. And the Germans, who still work hard and make stuff and save money, say, hey, we're not going to subsidize all these people. And neither the Chinese, which means, and this is true of the Americans too, you're just going to have to work harder and earn less for a while. And that's the reality of the situation you're facing.
Well, of course, the 100 times the money and that kind of stuff, of course, that is. But now with Greece, that has nothing to do with China. That has everything to do with Russia. Greece and all those islands from Santorini to Corfu to all of it, that is Russia-controlled, period.
So Greece owes money to Russia? Is that what you're saying?
Russia owns Greece.
How long has that been?
Well, you want to go back to the Bolsheviks? I mean, it goes way back.
Okay, so, but your point is that China is more involved with America and Russia is more involved with that area.
That's right.
So what Fulfer is saying, that the rest of the world won't do business with the Americans anymore, that's basically true?
That's right. Well, they couldn't do wire transfers anymore. SWIFT, ABA SWIFT transfers have been stopped forever.
Yeah, I don't know if you know that, Ed. They got stopped about March 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when the real crisis for American banking institutions started. You might want to explain a bit about that, Ion?
Well, they got their imbalances got so huge they couldn't balance it up, so they couldn't send the money out and they couldn't receive it.
Because Deutsche Bank made the decision.
There was nothing to back it to.
So when I mention this to some people, they say, well, I get my money transferred to Europe or whatever. What's that?
They do it from old-timey telexes. They have a corresponding bank in this country. It takes care of it, the pluses and minuses. They're not doing direct wire transfers with other outside U.S. banks.
Who's they? The Germans?
The people who say they're doing wire transfers.
Oh, I see. Okay, so
what are you talking about? That'll be the they it refers to.
Right. So the Deutsche Bank decided to not receive any transfers from the States.
No, they got out of balance. They had lots of wires coming in. Well, the money doesn't move in a wire transfer.
Mm.
It's just pluses and minuses. Well, their asset got a asset liability got so out of whack. They said, we can't take any more of this paper because we can't get rid of the last paper. Meanwhile, you've got Germany hugely, wildly purchasing these debt-backed mortgages or mortgage-backed debts.
In the United States?
Yes.
Okay, so they stopped doing that in 2006?
That's correct.
And what was the effect on Germany of buying those mortgage-backed debts?
Well, they're in the hole. They're screwed. You ever heard of a little bank called AB AMRO?
Yes.
ABM Row, yeah.
Or ABM Row.
Yeah, AMRO. So what happened to them?
They're holding probably as many U.S.-backed mortgages as probably Fannie Mae.
So they're in trouble.
They're gone.
Okay, so I'm just wondering, what's the first move? So the Germany said, we're losing on this, so around March 2006, they said,
they're not going to take any more international wire transfers based on your SWIFT system.
The SWIFT system. They stopped the SWIFT system.
Right.
SWIFT.
So you're getting ABA SWIFT. That's international. So if you get an international wire transfer, then it's going to have to go through something like American Express or through one of the banks that have a U.S. affiliate.
Right.
Here, you see, Barclays has branches here. You can do business with the Bank of England here. You can do business with Deutsche Bank here. You can do business with the Swiss private banks here. Well, that's where your transfers are happening from. It's all here to here. And then if you have a U.S. backed account, that's never a problem because it's in the U.S. You're just moving from A to B. But if you're just moving it from your left pocket to your right pocket, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
But if it has to go out of your pocket and you don't have any and you can't balance it and you already owe the general store more than you got, then it was after a point that the general store says, you can't have any more moon pies and RC colas because you ain't paid for the RC and moon pies you've already eat. Or I guess that would be an et. Right?
Yeah.
And when you said Greece is in default, that means Russia's in default?
Well, Russia, yeah, you could buy all of Russia for a penny.
So Russia's saying, forget it, we're not going to pay you back?
Right, and we're done.
No, no, Greece, Russia is the one owed.
Right, but who they owe, how they going to collect when they're defunct too? So Ed was on the right thread.
Mm.
They're in worse shape. I mean, You want to buy all of Russia? It's for sale.
So when Fulfer is saying that business is booming in the rest of the world,
it is.
That would be South America.
It is.
That would be Asia.
Most all of Asia Minor, specifically, yes.
Asia Minor. That's the Middle East.
Yes.
And how about Russia and the?
No.
So Europe, Russia, and the United States are in trouble. And Canada isn't so much.
Canada was never in a good enough shape to be in trouble.
Right, right. So it maintains its level of competence.
Of incompetence.
Yeah, the Peter Principle. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got that, Ed? So Fulford, what is erroneous in what Fulford's saying?
Just all this interaction from bank to bank, that it's all the bank doing the bank stuff for the bank.
Yeah.
This house is controlling that house, is controlling this dynamic, is controlling that dynamic, and that your gross national product is not based on currency, which is what it's supposed to be, it has to be, and he's saying that it's not anymore. Well, it's true, it's not, but not necessarily for the reasons that he's saying. But yes, at the end of the day, the pot is black. Mm-hmm. So, good.
So... and he talked about these bankers were trying to set up a world government, world fascism. He's saying...
Yeah, whatever. It's always something. So, you know, no. They were that smart that if we'd have seen this train wreck coming, that they're that powerful, they'd have cleaned this up and they'd have made it better. Because the last thing they wanted to be is in this particular position.
Mm.
Because now these banks... that supposedly are the ones trying to do the rectal probing on you, they're the ones that have all this property and can't do anything with it. They're screwed. They are screwed because now they have all this worthless real estate. Now nobody's paying a mortgage. Nobody's paying a credit card. Sally Mae's starting to change their bond yields. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad.
Okay, so Jeff Renz, he has this kind of information every night. What is his state of mind that he has to hear all this negative news all the time?
Well, after a while, suicide starts sounding real good.
Well, he's been doing this a long time. He hasn't suicided yet.
Well, you become anesthetized to it. I mean, it'd be like trauma surgeons. They see most everything.
So Jeff is anesthetized to all this negative information about the establishment in America.
With a little side of propanol, it couldn't hurt.
Okay, so we'll carry on here.
Essentially, what happened was
Well, before they decided to make the euro, the Germans, you know, with their very powerful Deutschmark, were very, very worried about the easy-spending Mediterraneans. I think the example I give is, you imagine a beautiful blonde heiress, this kind of playboy Mediterranean fiancé.
Could be a
brunette. Look, if we're going to get married, you have to, you know, play it straight, and they do so. Like, they're supposed to have a budget deficit of less than 3% of GDP.
Right.
Before they could join the euro.
Right.
Right? But as soon as they join the euro, it's party time. It's like, okay, now I got the marriage license, I got the money, I can go and be a playboy again, you know? And so now their deficit is, what, 14% or something?
That's, you know,
it's four times more than they're supposed to be allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
And they're lying about it. And basically, it's the Germans who have to pay. And they say, hey, why should we retire at 67 so the Greeks can retire at 63? You know, and they basically say, we're not going to pay these people. And what's going to happen? I don't see any way other than for the euro to disappear. It's going to, I'm pretty sure it's going to be replaced by a Mediterranean currency. But the idea of a fascist Soviet Europe, you know, I think is coming to an end. And it'll start with the Mediterranean countries breaking off. And there's no way they're going to fix that situation. It's just not possible. The Greeks need to get out of the euro and devalue their currency. And yeah, I would like to say also the United States is basically facing the same problem. They have to get out of the dollar. Amazingly, they always say, why doesn't China revalue the yuan, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that U.S. exports can be more competitive. But that's not the problem. The problem is that the currency that Americans use needs to be devalued. But 90% of the dollars ever created are not owned by Americans. And they don't want these dollars to be devalued.
They're overseas.
But because the U.S. government, more accurately, the Federal Reserve Board and the Corporation of Washington, D.C.,
correct,
don't want to give up that dollar printing press,
mm-hmm.
they're forcing the American economy down the tank through unemployment. So either you put out a new currency that buys less from the rest of the world, which forces you to buy more American and then boost your economy, or you pretend that you're still okay with these dollars and your manufacturing industry will continue to disintegrate because
mm-hmm.
you can't compete.
Mm-hmm.
So you're worse than Greece, would be my answer. Only your government is lying through their teeth about everything, so it's very hard to get accurate data.
Well, that's a given.
But I would say that they say, what, the Greece's deficit is over 100% of GDP. Well, the latest I figured out is that your deficit is something like 800% of your GDP.
That wouldn't surprise
me. And they just put it off the books and lie about it and fudge the numbers, but...
Okay, Ion, what was
gross national product, not gross domestic product. GDP doesn't have anything to do with your world ascertaining a malleable, gaugeable balance or imbalance of trade. The gross national product, not the domestic product.
He was saying domestic.
Yeah. And okay. it was a nice thought. It just didn't hold water.
Right. So he was saying that the euro was going to be saved by a new Mediterranean currency or something like that? Or be replaced? Did you
That's
catch
what
it?
He was saying.
Do you see that coming?
Not so much.
Well, the good news is if the euro collapses, it's back, the ball back. All bounces back to the dollar.
Well, it'll bouncy.
Okay, well, what would you say about his situation, what Fofa was saying there, or any aspect of what he was saying?
Just the correction from the gross, from the GDP and GNP.
So, Ed, did you get, can you summarize what the point he was making about Europe and Greece? Okay, so...
Well, I guess... Well, not Europe and Greece, but he was talking about Greece and the United States, and he said the United States was in much worse trouble than Greece is.
Why, sure. Well, of course.
Yeah, the Bank of England just said that the other day. I saw that.
I mean, the houses in Greece are a couple thousand years old, for Pete's sake. They don't have mortgages on them.
So, Ian, would you say that these financial woes that are going on now are the result of human beings, human creators taking their power back?
No. It's creating the human creators creating contrast so they can redefine what it is that they do want.
And that is step one of taking back your power?
Step three.
Yeah, 3-2-1-ing. That's three.
That's right.
But they got to go through 2-1 to get their power.
You're trying to have a manifestation, a creation. You'll engage your power, but to have the thought is enough to cause the creation. That's all that the essence of all creation is requiring, to have a thought and see the thought in your mind, and then you can touch it soon enough and make your final decisions of how it's all going to work out. But the shift in the flow that's taking place, human creators are getting to the point where they're sick of it. They're not having it anymore. They've lost everything. They got nothing to lose. It's only looking up from here. But when that happens, then everything changes. And then we U.S. personages, that's the we we're referring to, we the people, then become the dragon that China said many thousand years ago was going to be. That was before there was a what you call a U.S.
Or in before Christopher Columbus, before...
Way Marco Polo, long way back.
Way before Marco Polo.
Mm-hmm.
Back before Jesus, the three Jesuses?
Yes, of course.
And has that knowledge been passed down in an oral tradition way? Or did the ones who saw that lived didn't transition?
Yes and yes, and they wrote it down, Bob.
They're still here.
Mm-hmm.
Melchizedek is a junior partner in that level. Or are they...
What does that mean, Bob?
Well, I'm thinking that we consider Melchizedek, which we learned last Wednesday, is still here in Afghanistan. He's been around for, you know, thousands of years. I was trying to say the Chinese elders were longer than him.
Okay.
They could be, but they may not.
Many are, yeah.
Yeah, many are older than Mel.
Sure.
Well, we all are. On your principle that we've always been here.
No, that have still hung around in the same meeting.
Oh, yeah, right, right. Okay, so now we go to...
This is better, Ed. This is better. This is better flow. There's not so much extremist. There's just little tags that you could clean up. But the flow of the dynamic is very close to as it's presented. So it's not too far out of control.
And so you're addressing this particular interview.
Yeah, Fulker.
Just a little bit of cleanups, nothing major. You know, he hasn't blamed it on the space Jews yet, so it's going to be all right.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Ben, we got verification for you from non-physical. Way to go.
Who's that directed to?
Benjamin Fulker. And that ends this session of our analysis with Bob and Ion.
So let's see what she says.
But with the three waves, you've got to understand that they created life on Earth.
I understand that.
They have been taking care of us since the beginning of time. Therefore, they monitor everything that we do. They watch us constantly because we are part of the records that go into the history book. In the council, they have histories of every planet. Everything that happens is in the history book. So they have been monitoring everything that happens on Earth all that time. And whenever something is needed for Earth, some kind of a new invention or a new energy, a new power, it is given to us.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we have free will. They do have the directive of non-interference. You cannot interfere with a developing civilization. I know that's Star Trek, but it's not fiction, it's real.
I think that most people will actually know that because they know that we're on the brink of a complete change on the planet.
They would always give us the next thing that we needed in the growth of a civilization. And I asked them, isn't that interference? They said, no, because we give it to you as a gift when you need it in that time. What you do with it is your own free will. And most of the time what they give it to us for, we don't use it. We turn it into a weapon or something negative. So I said, can't you just come back and tell the civilization you're not doing it correctly? They said, no, because of that is interference.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to just watch and shake their heads. People, they have free will. You can do what you want with it, but you're not doing what we intended you to do with it. So that's what leads up to the three waves.
Well, the only issue, she's got such a pretty face. We just so really love and appreciate her. It's very wonderful.
But the words?
Well, you, it's a times event. And they can't interfere, but they've given every single thing that ever has been ever and provided it for you. But they can't interfere. Now, which way is it? If we need so much, they had to give us every essence of all that has been created. Well, it sounds like interference, any way you shake that.
And this conversation that she's having, this is a meme. There are many human creators have been putting out this information, that there are beings who created human creators and that they're watching them, and they cannot interfere.
Okay. Now, if you've used the words, okay. Fine, we'll give you that. But what they're referring to is not an alien, what you're calling alien, weirdo that's infiltrating you. It's the place of where this conversation comes from. You've got a human creator with their power, ascended being, if that's what you want to call it. And they've been saying that it a lot longer than your manic conspiracy theorist. Okay? You go way back before they started counting times, and there was lots of ascension going on. Okay? And that's way older. That's new age. Well, what we're talking about is old school. That it comes back when you had your power. Then the humans decided that they didn't want their power. They were going to magically imbue it in this box or in this mountain or in this capstone or in this thing or in this money check or in this baseball team or in this whatever it is. Okay? Well, you separate yourself from your power. Well, of course, then you have to have some alien technology dragging you by the noose of the rope, keeping you on a tight leash, because you've separated yourself from your power. So you open yourself up to anything. But if that's the case, what we call the fall of man, if that's what you want to call it, if you're saying aliens is just the human creators that forfeited their power, and then the ones that were before, that are now, that are next, that are yesterday or tomorrow, and they're orchestrating giving you what you need because you're so damn less than that you can't even control your own emotions because you're so distracted from your own place of beingness that you've got to have some alien fly down and point you in the right way and shake their head, the grays, the little ones. Oh, wait, we're outside of this process. Sorry, but that's coming. That this interaction is this outside Buddhians that have run along the Akashic records that through a post-past regressive hypnotherapy of some engagement of the healing schools and centers that open this all up. Oh, wait, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves or behind y'all in a... Well, either way, the short version of it is this alien technology, if you're going to call it alien, then call it you ask them from your power. That'd be alien.
What is it? You ask them?
You being absent
from
your power, that'd be an alien.
Well, it says here, Dolores Cannon is one of the foremost pioneers in regression hypnosis, using a technique she pioneered over 30 years ago that allows her to access the subconscious mind of her subjects. Now, you say there's no such thing as a subconscious, so that's a false premise from your view. What do you make of this regression? Subbed. What?
You can't get subbed.
Yeah, what do you make of regression hypnosis?
Pretty words.
Pretty words. She believes by her use of her technique that she gains access to the universal mind. Her objective is therapy. I don't know. Her objective is therapy for her clients and ultimately an investigation to recover lost or hidden knowledge into who we really are. Now, you're saying there was an...
Well, that lost and hidden knowledge is what happened. That would happen when you have the fall.
Right.
When they're putting the power in the box because we can't be trusted as gods.
So, then the retrieve of... You retrieve the hidden knowledge by recognizing the fall and realizing it doesn't apply to you.
Realizing that you can have, if you're not ascended, that you get your power. And you lay it out real simple, have a thought, see the thought, engage it. And once that starts working for you and the cares of life grow strangely dim, you'll quit worrying about what your past, pre, next, regressed, hypnotherapy, hypodermic, poking regarding your reality gets cleaned up. You pass the vaccination because you don't have to have the shot. Well, then there you go. And if you come into your power, you don't have to have somebody telling you what you did, how you were less than because you couldn't keep up with your own power of your creations. You don't have to have somebody come tell you how these watchers was coming trying to straighten you out and they kept kicking you in the head and you wouldn't behave. And so after the nuclear bombs that apparently these same nasty aliens gave them because America needed that atomic bomb, so they gave them every step of the way when they needed some nastiness that they could then kind of do this. So that's not new. That's back to Old Testament when God would call the angels to smote the bad, irreverent humans. So, you see, if they're given all the power and then mad because they're using the power, you ought to put them aliens up. Them aliens is the ones that's messed everything up. They'd have kept their needful technology to themselves, folks, when they had so much contrast within their dynamic of the world. That'd be like saying you gave a 5-year-old some dynamite and a pack of matches, strike anywhere matches, and mad at the 5-year-old. Well, if you didn't have better sense than to give a certainly lower, lesser than, well, not even lower than the dolphins, a lower life form, vast information and power, what would you expect?
Well, we could listen to it. You want me to play a little more of Dolores?
I would say just that little bit more, because this is kind of an interesting idea. A call went out in the universe to volunteer ETs to come to Earth and help, who were karma-free, to come to Earth and help the poor Earthlings who are invested in karma and help to remove them from the wheel of karma.
Any comment on that, Ion, if you don't
get
bombed?
The wheels on the bus go round and round. And see, if you don't embrace karma, then you don't have to get over it.
So when you have a note here, souls came from God, which is the source, and returned to God. If Ion says we're God, then we came from our...
That's a true statement.
If you define that we're God, that we came from ourselves, try to prove that to a scientist, Ed, that you came from yourself and we're here forever.
Oh, that's easy.
Oh, yeah. How do you do that?
Well, Ed, go in your dupes of hazard thread and, that's not a problem. We'll just...
They'll do it on the computer that doesn't work. Or, no, it does work now, right? It's fixed.
Yeah, well, let's see.
His
professor of philosophy pauses for his class and then asks one of his new students to stand. Let me explain the problem science has with its religion. You're a Christian, aren't you, son? Yes, sir, the student says. So you believe in God? Absolutely. Is God good? Sure, God's good. Is God all-powerful? God can do anything? Yes. Are you good or evil? The Bible says I'm evil. The professor grins knowingly. Aha, the Bible. He considers for a moment. Here's one for you. Let's say there's a sick person over there, and you can cure him. What can do it? Who can? Can you do it? Would you help him? Would you try? Yes, sir, I would. So, you're good. I wouldn't say that. But why not say that? You'd help a sick and maimed person if you could. Most of us would if we could. But God doesn't. The student does not answer, so the professor continues. He doesn't, does he? My brother was a Christian who died of cancer, even though he prayed for Jesus to heal him. How is this Jesus good? Can you answer that one? The student remains silent. No, you can't, can you? Professor says he takes a sip of water from the glass on his desk to give the student time to relax. Let's start again, young fella. Is God good? Yes, the student says. Is Satan good? The student does not hesitate on this one and says no. Then, where does Satan come from? The student falters. From God. That's right. God made Satan, didn't he? Tell me, son, is there evil in the world? Yes, sir. Evil's everywhere, isn't it? And God didn't make everything, correct? Did make everything, correct? Yes. So, who created evil? The professor continued. If God created everything, then God created evil. Since evil exists, and according to the principle that our works define who we are, then God is evil. Again, the student had no answer. Is there sickness, immortality, hatred, ugliness, all these terrible things? Do they exist in the world? The student squirms on his feet. Yes. So, who created them? The student doesn't answer again, so the professor repeats the question, who created them? There is still no answer. Suddenly, the lecturer breaks away to face in front of the classroom. The class is mesmerized. Tell me, he continues on to another student, do you believe in Jesus Christ, son? The student's voice betrays him and cracks, yes, professor, I do. The old man stops pacing. Science says that you have 5 senses you use to identify and observe the world around you. Have you ever seen Jesus? No, sir, I have not seen him. Then, tell us if you've ever heard your Jesus. No, sir, I have not. Have you ever felt your Jesus, tasted your Jesus, smelt your Jesus? Have you ever had any sensory perception of Jesus Christ or God, for that matter? No, sir, I'm afraid I haven't. Yet you still believe in him? Yes. According to the rules of empirical, testable, demonstrable protocol, science says your God does not exist. What do you say to that, son? Nothing, the student replies. I only have faith. Yes, faith, the professor repeats, that is the problem science has with God. There's no evidence, only faith. The student stands quietly for a moment before asking a question of his own. Professor, is there such a thing as heat? Yes. And is there such a thing as cold? Yes, son, there's cold too. No, sir, there isn't. The professor turns to face the student, obviously interested. The room suddenly becomes very quiet. The student begins to explain. You can have lots of heat, even more heat, superheat, mega heat, unlimited heat, white heat, and a little heat or no heat. But we don't have anything called cold. We can hit down to 458 degrees below zero, which is no heat. But we can't go any further than that. There is no such thing as cold. Otherwise, we would be able to go colder than the lowest, minus 458 degrees. Every body or object is susceptible to study when it has or transmits energy, and heat is what makes a body or matter have or transmit energy. Absolute zero, minus 458 degrees Fahrenheit, is the total absence of heat. You see, sir, cold is only a word we use to describe the absence of heat. We cannot measure cold. Heat we can measure in thermal units because heat is energy. Cold is not the opposite of heat, sir, just the absence of it. Silence falls across the room. A pin drops somewhere in the classroom, sounding like a hammer. What about darkness, professor? Is there such a thing as darkness? Yes, the professor replies without hesitation. What is night if it isn't darkness? You're wrong again, sir. Darkness is not something in the air. It is the absence of something. You can have low light, normal light, bright light, flashing light, but if you have no light constantly, you have nothing, and it's called darkness, isn't it? That's the meaning we use to define the word. In reality, darkness isn't. If it were, you'd be able to make darkness darker, wouldn't you? The professor begins to smile at the student in front of him. This will be a good semester. So what point are you making, young man? Yes, professor, my point is your philosophical premise is flawed to start with. So your conclusion must also be flawed. The professor's face can't hide his surprise this time. Flawed? Can you explain how? You're working on the premise of duality, the student explains. You argue that there is life and then there's death. A good God and a bad God. You are viewing the concept of God as something finite, something we can measure. Sir, science can't even explain a thought. It uses electricity and magnetism, but has never seen, much less fully understood, either one. To view death as the opposite of life is to be ignorant of the fact that death cannot exist as a substantive thing. Death is not the opposite of life, just the absence of it. Now, tell me, Professor, do you teach your students that they evolved from a monkey? If you're referring to the natural evolutionary process, young man, yes, of course I do. Have you ever observed evolution with your own eyes, sir? The professor begins to shake his head, still smiling as he realizes where the argument is going. A very good semester indeed. Since no one has ever observed the process of evolution at work and cannot even prove that this process is an ongoing endeavor, you are not teaching your opinion, sir. You are now not a scientist, but a preacher.
You're not teaching your opinion, sir.
Well, what did we say?
The opposite. Are you now not a scientist but a preacher?
Oh, sorry. Are you now not a scientist but a preacher is the question. The class is in an uproar. The student remains silent until the commotion has subsided. To continue the point you were making earlier to the other student, let me give you an example of what I mean. The student looks around the room. Is there anyone in the class who's ever seen the professor's brain? The class breaks out into laughter. Is there anyone here who's ever heard the professor's brain, felt the professor's brain, touched or smelt the professor's brain? No one appears to have done so. So, according to the established rules of empirical, stable, demonstrable protocol, science says that you have no brain. With all due respect, sir, so, if science says that you have no brain, how can we trust your lectures, sir? Now the room is silent. The professor stares at the student, his face unreadable. Finally, after what seems an eternity, the old man answers, I guess you'll have to take them on faith. Now, you accept that there is faith, and if... In fact, faith exists with life, the student continues. Now, sir, is there such a thing as evil? Now, uncertain, the professor responds, of course there is. We see it every day. It is in the daily example of man's inhumanity to man. It is in the multitude of crime and violence everywhere in the world. These manifestations are nothing else but evil. To this, the student replied, evil does not exist, sir, or at least it does not exist unto itself. Evil is a simple, simply the absence of God. It is just like darkness and cold, a word that man has created to describe the absence of God. God did not create evil. Evil is the result of what happens when man does not have God's love present in his heart. It's like the cold that comes when there is no heat, or the darkness that comes when there is no light. Then, of course, the professor sat down. Now, P.S. The student was Albert Einstein, and the book was entitled God vs. Science, published in 1921. Now, there's your answer to your anomaly, Bob.
And that ends this session of our analysis. Thank you, Bob, and Ion.